we will not need to repeat everything we know about ancient Corinth. Remember from last time, it was a very wicked city. I don't think there's anything like it this bad in our country. In 1 Corinthians 6, last week's chapter, Paul had taught the believers in Corinth not to go to the pagan temple of Aphrodite. By contrast, he said, each person is the temple of God. God dwells within each person, so don't go to these places. 1 Corinthians 6 had talked about immorality, and it placed it in the unprofitable category, the unbeneficial category. We would also say the costly category. Unprofitable could be costly, and unbeneficial could be dangerous. Their excuse is, where we're not under the law. Well, part of the law of Moses was repeated over in the New Testament, and that was definitely repeated. Then, 1 Corinthians 6 is about the evil sins of sex. Next, 1 Corinthians 7 will go in the other direction and give a positive view of sex within marriage. It is possible that the Corinthians thought that celibacy would be better. I'll keep repeating it because I think it says it faster. The Corinthians might have asked the question whether being a monk or a nun type would be better than being married, and the answer, no, not if it's God's will for you to be married. So, if a person is single, then abstinence, but if a person is married, then abstinence would be wrong. The stress on being single would be verse 1. So let's look at 1 Corinthians 7, verse 1. Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Might be good to be abstinent. If you're single, it is a good thing to be abstinent. Now, before we get into the exact topic, I would like to look at the phrase, now concerning the things about which you wrote. This begins the third section of the book of 1 Corinthians. The first section, chapters 1 through 4, would be topics that are reported by Chloe's people. Relatives or employees of Chloe had gone over to Paul in Ephesus over in Turkey, and they had told her about quarreling among the Corinthian leaders of who is the greatest and who had the most baptisms. So that came from the reports of Chloe's people, chapters 1 through 4. Section 2 was about rumors. There was no need to have messengers. Rumors seem to work. They go all over the place. There were rumors, especially of Corinthians suing each other in court, and that made it all the way across the waters. So we go from reports of Chloe's people to rumors. This section, chapter 7, is the third section. Now concerning the letter questions that you wrote, the Corinthians must have written a letter, and they had all kinds of questions. We find them later on through the book by tracing the phrase now concerning. Here in verse 1, now concerning being single. Verse 25, now concerning virgins. That's a way of saying now concerning whether fathers should give their daughters in marriage. Now concerning spiritual gifts is chapter 12. Now concerning the offering or church collections. So all the rest of the book, they had written a letter, and they were asking all these questions to Paul, and he has started to answering them. Verse 1 is a new section. On the other hand, it kind of contrasts the previous chapter. Chapter 6 was on sexual sins. Chapter 7 is going to be on sexual blessings. So it's answering the Corinthian question, so in some ways it's a new section, but the topic reverses the previous. Chapter 6 was, it is wrong. was wrong for the Corinthians to go to the pagan temples. Chapter 7, it is right. This is kind of like listening to a person talking on a phone. You can't hear the other line. We have the answers Paul gives. We don't have the exact questions. The answer Paul gives was about being celibate. That's the answer. So they asked some sort of question about that. Now, I think probably in their day, the question would be a little bit different than we might think. In my home church, they thought that everybody should get married. They were dating each other at age 16 or 17, and all the kids were married at 18. And we didn't get married until I got through graduate school, and we were 25. So we had all these people that said something like, I'm praying for you to get married, and I'll put feet to my prayers and do something. That's my home church. And they were all married right out of high school. So attitude would assume there's something wrong with being singular. I think probably the Corinthians' attitude was a little bit more like we would say now the monks and the nuns. They would think it is better to be singular, better to go be what we would call a monk or a nun. I think they would think that way, or they would ask a question in that direction. And the answer is going to be, it can be good to be single, verse 1. It can be good to be married, verses 2 and following. It depends upon God's will for that person. And we'll read verses like that later on. So now concerning what you wrote in the letter, it's okay to be singular, single. That could be good if that's what God's will is for you, to be single. And that can be a very good thing. So being single can be good, but it's not the only good way of life. And as he'll go on, he will talk about being married, and that is a good way of life. So, single can be good, being married can be good. Now, he's going to talk about his opinion that being single was especially good, but we need to look a little bit ahead as to why that's his opinion. Let's look ahead at verse 26. We won't get to 26 directly today, but in order to interpret Paul's opinion, we need to look at verse 26. I think that it is good in view of the present distress or the present danger, it is good for a man to remain as he is. In other words, looking ahead to Paul's attitude is, it's a dangerous time. There's persecution. It could be better for a single lady to stay with her dad. And it could be better not to get married right now because of, quote, verse 26, the present distress. So we have to think of that in Paul's mind with some of the words he's given. It could be good to remain single if you live in Ukraine or Afghanistan. That kind of thing. It could be good to remain single for the present distress. That's verse 26. Also, let's look at verse 17. As the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each. In other words, keep in mind whether it's a time of danger. Maybe you shouldn't have a family now. Danger, like Corinth. Danger, like some places in our world now. And also, God has some people, you're supposed to be single, you're supposed to be married. So we have to keep in mind, Paul's going to say it would be good to be single at his time and at his place because it's dangerous. But he is going to say God has called different people different ways. Both of these should be kept in mind. Verse 1, it can be good to be single. No one, though, as he goes on, no one even in Corinth, even in the danger, must think there's anything wrong if they did get married. So, verse 1, it can be God's will to be unmarried. God wants some people unmarried. God wants some people always unmarried. That is a category. And it can be used of God greatly. And verse 1 is saying that single can be God's will. And if single, then celibate. We use the Catholic term, abstinent, to use another term. If single, that can be good. Yet, God wants other people to be married. Verse 17 is God has assigned to each. So even if it is a dangerous time, verse 26, he's going to say, well, the fathers, that's their culture, the fathers can decide. So verse 1, being single can be holy, but it wasn't quite that Paul was teaching everybody should be single. So now we go to verse 2 through 4. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to the wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Well, I would like to begin with the phrase, each and his own. Or each and her own. Not a big deal to us, but this is one and one. This is monogamy. God's pattern from the beginning in Genesis 2:24 was one man and one woman. The pattern that God had in the Old Testament was monogamy. Jesus endorsed this, quoting Genesis 2 in Matthew 19:4 and 5. In the beginning, he made them male and female. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. They two shall be one. So we definitely have heterosexual from Law of Moses, from Jesus' endorsement. Then we have one and one. God's pattern was monogamy. Now, in the Old Testament, there's plenty of polygamy. Now, what are we to do with that? And it's kind of like this. That was never God's pattern, but he didn't take them to court. He didn't give penalties for it in the Old Testament times. So his pattern way back from Genesis was monogamy. That is God's pattern. Polygamy was never God's pattern, but people did it. In some places now in the world, they still do it, particularly Muslim places, and if they can get away with it, some Mormon places. But the pattern always was one and one, male and female. That's God's pattern. The stories of polygamy in the Bible is God didn't give a penalty for it, but they were always a mess. It doesn't matter which one you think of. You think of Abraham, and he had Sarah and Hagar, and they couldn't get along, and they were fighting all the time. You have Jacob, and you have Leah and Rachel, and they were fighting all the time. You have Solomon and all his pagan wives led his heart astray, 1 Kings chapter 11. The Old Testament didn't give a penalty for polygamy, but it gave all kinds of stories that it won't work out very well, and it did not in the Bible stories. It did not, what I know of, say, Turkish history, and because I've been to Turkey, I've read a bunch of Turkish history. And they always were fighting each other, including killing each other. In the New Testament, Herod had all these wives. Same thing. They all hate each other. They all want each other dead. So the Bible's pattern has always been monogamy. And when people disobeyed it in the Old Testament, God didn't give a penalty, but he didn't say it was very good and gave all these stories of how bad it can be. We don't have it very much. I met one young man whose father had many wives, and they were Muslims. I met him and spent quite a bit of time with him over in Uganda, and he was all messed up from this. And I didn't have a long time to talk with her, but I have talked with the Jessup family in person, the Mormons. And she wasn't having a real good time either. So his own, that's the Bible's pattern. And It is a man and woman. It is one-on-one. That's the Bible's pattern. Jesus endorsed it, and Paul is endorsing it. And actually, by the time of the New Testament, there wasn't that much polygamy. It went really down during the exile. And when they came home, Ezra preached against it. And when they came home, there was mostly one-on-one. We think of Herod as being the opposite, but he's a weirdo, can I say it? I mean, Herod. So most of the people in Jesus' time, most of the people in Paul's time, it was one-on-one. Now, previously, in chapter 6, Paul had talked about being forbidden to go to the Aphrodite temple, but he didn't want them to think that that has anything to do with Christian marriage. And so we now see here, verses 2 through 4, concerning immoral sex, he had flee. In 1 Corinthians 6, there's flee in 2 Timothy 2. It thinks of Potiphar and Mrs. Potiphar. And here we have the opposite. We are going to preach lots of Song of Solomon. I did do it verse by verse, and before I did it, I wondered, how am I going to get away with this? And I did it on purpose in the 9:15 service, so Song of Solomon is the whole book of the Bible. Proverbs 5, verses 18 and 19, rejoice with the wife of your youth. Ken read Hebrews 13:4, the marriage bed is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. Now, there's the Christian attitude towards it. You had in 1 Corinthians 6, immoral sexuality with the prostitutes in the Aphrodite temple in Corinth. Then you have 1 Corinthians 7, and he wanted to make sure that his comments about the wicked temple in 1 Corinthians 6 had nothing to do with married couples. If single, celibacy is right and can be good, God's will for some people. If married, celibacy and being cold is wrong. The next section, though, does give what I had already said, that Paul is worried about the present distress. Verses 6 through 9. But this I say by way of concession, not of command, yet I wish all men were even as myself. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this matter, another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Paul's opinion should be evaluated in the light of verse 26. The present danger, the present distress. He thought that because of persecution and because of danger, that people, especially fathers in this culture, should leave their girls at home and they should not be married. So that's his own opinion. He is saying it is not a command. It's not what God commands. If the Corinthians got married, even though it was a dangerous time, there wasn't anything wrong with that. So when he argues for being single, we have to put in mind it's because of the persecution and because of the danger. He will later in 1 Timothy 5:14, I will that younger women marry and bear children. So it's a different place, different time. Some of this, some of his opinion about himself not being married because of missionary travels. Some of his opinion because of the danger. Now we're ready to move on to verse 10, but I do want to say before we read it, in verse 10, Paul will give Jesus teaching. Now, this kind of means the history of the New Testament, because Jesus' teaching was already known by the time 1 Corinthians was written. 1 Corinthians, we have a very clear date for it, because it has the Roman governor Gallio, and he's mentioned outside the Bible. So, 1 Corinthians was written about AD 57, and already, by AD 57, Jesus' teachings was all out and around. The liberals will say, we don't know what Jesus really taught. and that the Gospels were not written until long after he was here, and nobody remembered him anymore. That really is a lie, and they really ought to know it. The Gospels were all written before the temple fell in AD 70, and he can say to the Corinthian readers, here's what Jesus taught about marriage. He's writing in AD 57, and we know what Jesus taught in AD 30s. It wasn't that long ago. Now, for the direct teaching of what he taught, we're going to go ahead and look at verses 10 and 11, but I will leave out a parenthesis. Verse 10. But to the married I give instructions, not I but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. And then the close of verse 11. And that the husband should not divorce his wife. The middle is parenthetical. And it wasn't really the words of Jesus, it's Paul's words. We'll come back to it. For the minute, let's look at Paul's repetition of Jesus' teaching. Jesus was basically teaching marriage is permanent. I hate divorce, says the Lord God of Israel. Malachi 2:16. In Mark and Luke and 1 Corinthians, there are no exception clauses. Matthew 5 and 19 does give an exception clause, except for adultery. If we were dealing directly with adultery, it is a grounds for divorce. People can forgive each other, like in the book of Hosea, but it is a grounds for divorce. Jesus has it as an exception clause in Matthew 5 and Matthew 19. But there was no need to bring that teaching in here because they weren't talking about adultery. They were talking about, could we Corinthians all divorce and all be single and all be celibate? Is being celibate so much better than being married that we should divorce each other in order to be celibate? And so that's the mindset with which you come to this. And the answer is no. The Lord gave instructions that marriage is permanent, and that while adultery is the clause in Matthew, that wasn't brought in here because the actual perspective is, would being single be more holy? And should we all get divorced so we can all be single and all be holy? And Paul's going to say, Jesus didn't teach that. Jesus taught that marriage is permanent. I think we've got to look at this. The fastest way to say it is from the monk and nun category. Shall we get a divorce and all become monks and nuns? And Paul's like, no. That's what Jesus taught. No, we shouldn't all get divorces and become monks and nuns. That's kind of, I think, the questions that the Corinthians were asking. You said in chapter 6 not to go to the pagan temple, but that's got nothing to do with being married. It's got nothing to do with whether being abstinent for married people would be better. He's going to talk about that shortly, but be abstinent in marriage is only for a short period of time that you might have more, might say, go to the walk to Emmaus for a week, a little bit of time. Now let's look at verse 11 in the middle. This is Paul's addition to Jesus' teaching. But if she does leave, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. Well, sometimes people do separate. And what if there's been no adultery and they separate? There has not been a biblical grounds for divorce, but they separate. Well, the teaching here is then they aren't free to look around and find somebody else. If a Christian couple separates, but there has been no adultery or grounds for divorce, then they should remain single or else get it fixed. That's kind of what Paul adds here. Jesus didn't talk about this subject. Not that he didn't know about it, he just didn't talk about it. So the parenthesis, if there is a separation and has not been any adultery, Paul's teaching is then they are not at liberty to go find somebody else. If they no longer live together, but neither has committed adultery, Paul hopes they can get reconciled someday. But in the meantime, they should remain single. Next, in verses 12 and 13, Paul adds more to Jesus' teaching. Let's look at verses 12 and 13. To the rest, I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And if a woman has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, she must not send her away. I think what you have here is kind of the Corinthian attitude is, shall we all get divorces and be single because being celibate would be better? And the answer is no. Then the next question is, what about believers and unbelievers being married together? Should we divorce all the unbelievers so we can be single and be celibate because that would be better? And the answer is no, you should not divorce even an unbeliever. Marriage is holy even when the people who start it are not. And so you have in here, marriage is permanent. Marriage of Christian to Christian is permanent. Marriage of Christian to non-Christian is permanent. We have all kinds of verses that a believer should not marry an unbeliever. And I have them all without time to read them. But Amos 3:3, for example, can two walk together unless they be agreed? All kinds of Old Testament verses not to marry into the pagans. 2 Corinthians 6:14 is a more broad teaching than just marriage, but don't be unequally yoked together in the context. Don't go to the pagan temple. Well, if you don't go to the pagan temple at all, you don't go to the pagan temple to have your own wedding. Directly teaching is not as really a spunky type phrase, but Paul does say, here in 1 Corinthians 7, you get near the end, verse 39, get married only in the Lord. All kinds of verses that believers are supposed to only marry another believer. But what happens if they don't? If you have a believer and an unbeliever married. Or maybe they start out and they're both non-Christian, but one trusts in Jesus and the other one hasn't made that decision yet. These verses are saying, it still is a holy marriage. If a marriage started out as disobedience, if a marriage started out as unsaved, it still is a holy marriage. Unholy people making a marriage make a holy marriage. So we have all through here, probably the Corinthians are asking, shall we become single and celibate? Wouldn't becoming like a monk or a nun be more holy? And the answer is no. If a person, God's will for them is to be single, then that's their calling. If a person's will is to be married, then they should stay married. And not have any thought that breaking this off and becoming like a monk or a nun and being celibate, that would be more holy. We have no divorce. If they're separate, but there's been no adultery, try to fix it. If they're married a believer to an unbeliever, that's still a holy marriage. And so the answers we have, the exact Corinthian questions we do not, but the answers we have, and the answers are that all marriages are holy, and none of the Corinthians ought to think that they could get a divorce and be celibate then after the divorce, and that would be more holy. No, it would not. So, chapter 6, don't do immoral things. Chapter 7, if you're single, be celibate, if that's God's will for you. If you're married, don't abstain. Maybe for a little time. Maybe the quickest way to say it is maybe on a little convention, maybe on a little Christian seminar. But after that, then be back together again. We will look at more of 1 Corinthians 7 next time. It will continue this subject. On the other hand, it will add the idea that time is short. In other words, if it seems like the world is ending, it seemed to Paul the world is ending. So time is short. We'll look at that again. Will the musicians please come?